You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome to another edition of Pope Culture.
Yeah.
And here on Breadbox Media. And I'm Carl Kozlowski, one of your co-hosts. And with me is...
Tanya Yarbrough, the other co-host. What?
What? There's two people.
That's a co-host thing going on. It's a co-host thing. All right. So we got a bunch of stories that are salacious only because we talk about...
Ooh.
Yeah, like really hot to handle, like hot crossed buns. You know what those are, Carl.
Oh, okay.
Don't look at me so
all
weird.
Right.
I don't eat bread anymore. I'm a celiac, so I can only dream. But anyway, the whole deal is we got a bunch of like... Yeah, apparently he's got mail too. Yeah, hey. Yay, play it. All right, so we got a bunch of salacious stuff because we talk about media and culture and Catholicism and how it goes in and out. We even, hopefully someday, like a tartan, it'll be the main color. But we were looking at kilts for my future wedding. So I got that in my brain.
And she's wearing an Asian guy, so that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, what's wrong with Korean kilts? What about that? It's got the KK. Well, that's not good to say. All right, so what are we starting off with, mister?
Well, this week, the essence of the show for those tuning in the first time is that we bring you a Catholic layperson's point of view from both men and woman perspective, male female perspective, and we're both comedians who've done tons of shows all over the country, regular and for Catholic audiences as well. So we try to be funny while also having a point.
We try.
But I don't know which is harder, having a point or being funny. But this week, a couple of really controversial things right off the top. But Lady Gaga, not really salacious, actually kind of nice of her. Lady Gaga, who was salacious in the past, she has been surprisingly classing up her career in the last couple of years on the music level, at least. Mm-hmm. She teamed up with Tony Bennett, excuse me, about 2 years ago and started wearing gowns and going on tour and doing an album full of standards and these really sweet Barnes
and
Noble commercials.
Only wearing face makeup instead of on the rest of her body.
Yeah, no more dresses made out of meat.
At least that we see.
Yeah, so, but then on the other hand, she won an Emmy for, or at least a Golden Globe for American Horror Story Hotel, in which she played the head evil person of a possessed hotel that plays host to the spirits of America's most notorious serial killers. And she did lots of naughty things in that. So the thing is that it's surprising when she did something very sweet in the past couple weeks. She basically posted an Instagram in which she... took a picture while dressed, wearing normal person clothes, took a picture with her priest and she was holding like a Catholic prayer book with definitely a Catholic style kind of cross on it and having what appeared to be a rosary crucifix sticking out of her shirt pocket and posed with the priest thanking him for his sermon about communion. And I'm going to try and pull up the exact Instagram here in a second, but basically what the controversy was is that another Catholic media site, Catholic Link, commented on her how surprised they were that she did this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's kind of an interesting little controversy back and forth because Gaga heard about it and wrote back, I think, a very classy, sweet thing. And unfortunately, I'm pulling up the overall site, but you were the one who brought it to my attention, I believe, Tanya, right?
Yeah, or at least you know that. I was like, how did we not, you know, when we talked about doing the show for this week, how did we not catch that? But the gist I was getting out of it, and I honestly did not even go to the original source, which, you know, we should do that someday, is is that she brings up the concept of Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, I've got it right
and,
here.
Yeah, okay, good.
But go ahead.
Yeah, but the whole concept of Mary Magdalene and you know, granted from the description of the picture, it sounds very, it looks very staged. But then on the other hand, what is not staged with Lady Gaga, however, does not mean that she was not truly pleased with going to Mass and hearing a homily about the Eucharist and decided to take this picture to announce it. So my instinct is to say she hasn't been putting down the Catholic Church per se. She hasn't, she's, like you said, been kind of cleaning up her act. And this could be an actual conversion for her. And even though it was sort of a nicely staged picture, it doesn't mean that in her heart she is not actually starting to work around things, you know, like starting to get past all the anger and bitterness and the you know, the perversion that was in her songs and videos and stuff, and starting to change her life. So,
well, I mean, and the thing is that if I recall, two things about her in relation to this so-called or the accusations that they're, you know, sort of saying about her. I don't know if the accusation is the right word, but how they label her. Gaga on stage was weird in a lot of ways, in her outfits and whatnot, in her videos. But I think most of her songs were just like pop songs that weren't really particularly graphic. It wasn't like Madonna all over again with like a virgin and things like that. The imagery was weird in some of them, but the lyrics weren't that bad to begin with, if I recall. And you know, she wasn't quite as bad as Madonna song-wise, but the videos were weird. But anyway, as far as her taking a picture with the priest, I don't think it's that she's trying to show off, because, I mean, in today's culture, it is not something that a rock star would normally do. Like, you don't go bragging that you hung out with a priest and that you went to Mass.
Right.
So I think it's very sincere. I think she was trying to set a good example to people. Rather than saying, oh, look at me, because look at me is when she's wearing a meat dress.
Yeah.
Which, for those who don't know, was she actually showed up at the Grammys or American Music Awards one year wearing a dress in which literally steaks were put together by chains, and she was wearing that, walking around wearing a dress made of meat.
Which, so, by the way, if you wear steaks to your bare skin where your shoulders are exposed, you're going to be cold all night. I'm just telling you right now. That's what's going to happen.
That's the number one safety concern.
That was the first thing I thought of, besides the fact that it was a waste of some pretty darn good steaks right there. But the deal is that with when I was talking about the staged picture, how the rosary's perfectly placed and all that stuff is what I'm talking about, the staging part. But the genuine, was she genuine about being very happy and wanting to you know, sort of, this was her expression of joy about something genuine.
Yeah.
And something good. And I felt like that's what was going on with this situation. And then that's why she responded in the way that she did to their criticism. And then, of course, they responded back with going, well, we weren't really judging you. And I'm like, I think you kind of were.
Yeah.
Assuming you know what was in her heart. But where did you find
Well, here's, okay, so I found all three, the start, the judging, and the response. But anyway, so she thanked a priest on her Facebook page for his, quote, beautiful homily as always, indicating she does, in fact, go to church regularly. I want to find that church, but anyway.
She's not wearing a dress.
Quote, so moved today. What moved her so much, she says, the priest said the Eucharist is not a prize for the perfect, but the food that God gives us. The priest's words are a reference to a line from Pope Francis' apostolic exhortation, Evangelii Gaudium 47. The Eucharist, although, I know, that's
you
really good.
You gotta brush up on your Latin, sir.
I know. The Eucharist, although it is the fullness of sacramental life, is not a prize for the perfect, but a powerful medicine and nourishment for the weak. In an accompanying photo, she is standing next to the priest holding what appears to be a Bible, as well as to have either a cross necklace or a rosary in her shirt pocket. Lady Gaga is one of the most followed celebrities on social media, with 61.6 million likes on her Facebook page. I need her to come work for us. And 59 million followers on Twitter. As a music artist and performer, she is known for her raunchy style and promotion of sexual perversion. That's what churchpop.com says. Born as Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germanata, that's definitely Catholic. Yeah. She was raised in a Catholic family and attended an all-girls Catholic school through high school. Although her music has often promoted and celebrated things contrary to the Catholic faith, it's not clear what her religious beliefs and practices are currently. Oh, I don't know. Other than the, as always, about his homily, I think it's quite clear that she does go. But, so then Catholic Link did a, did the story. I can't find the original one, but her response where they critiqued her, and then I'll read Catholic Link's response to that, was she said that, the Catholic Link article was written by Becky Roach and was titled From Lady Gaga to Steph Curry, who's a basketball player, amazingly named Steph. Okay, five things to remember when celebrities share their faith. Roach points to a few celebrities who have spoken publicly about their Christian faith recently, including Gaga, and encourages her readers to pray for them and remember that they are imperfect just like everyone else. Lady Gaga posted a screenshot of part of the article that read, "So what is a Catholic to do with all these situations? Many celebrities are sharing Bible verses, quoting priests, and singing Christian music while at the same time still leading a typical Hollywood lifestyle void of Christian values such as modesty and purity. There are some, like Steph Curry, that appear to make faith more than just a tweet or Facebook status. You can find a list of Catholic celebrities here." So what Lady Gaga said in response was, "Dear Becky Roach, Mary Magdalene washed the feet of Christ and was protected and loved by him, a prostitute. Someone society shames as if she and her body are a man's trash can. He loved her and did not judge. He let her cry over him and dry his feet with the hair of a harlot. We are not just quote-unquote celebrities. We are humans and sinners, children, and our lives are not void of values because we struggle. We are as equally forgiven as our neighbor. God is never a trend, no matter who the believer." And so then Catholic Link said, this is turning into a rap battle, East Coast versus West Coast. It says, "Our article, quote, was not aimed at judging you." And it said, "Your screenshot was a one part of the article which was not aimed at judging you. Rather, it was an effort to help Catholics to have a balanced and positive view of these kinds of sharings." And then it says, "It was an invitation to value the hunger of God that exists in the world of the famous. It was a reminder to not forget that they, like us, are fragile, that we should not judge, rather pray for them. This said, what you wrote is absolutely beautiful. It is one of the most touching comments we have ever read." Well, good for them. "Know that we will be praying that experience of God's mercy continue to grow and bear fruits for you, for the people that you love, and all of your followers." Well, that's nice. Okay, so then that's that. I mean, that's where they're at,
I guess. Well, I can understand why God felt that way. I mean, because I, you know, and just here, let me just give you guys a perspective on my personal life. My mother's favorite revenge was to say, "Well, I'll pray for you." And so I think sometimes we have to be careful about when we say that and why we're saying that. If, why is it necessary sometimes? We have to ask ourselves, I hear it not just from Catholics, but other Christians. Well, they'll say when they disagree with you or they argue with you or they're not sure if they agree with you, they will bring, or they don't agree with, like, they assume something about your life or whatever, they'll purposely walk up to you and say, "I'll pray for you." And a lot of times it's in a condescending tone or in a tone of, like, this is my sweet revenge / I am better than you. And I think it's not very, it is not, it does not behoove us, and it does not help the work of Christ to use "I'll pray for you" as a judgment, really, and as a revengeful tactic. So I can understand why Lady Gaga was saying that, because they followed through with the "I'll pray for you" or was preceding. Now my dyslexia is kicking in, but it was all in the tone of, we don't, their lives seem to contradict. And honestly, my life contradicts. If you hear any of my other podcasts, you would be like red beat, and I'm changing that. But, you know, you're just going to be, you would be embarrassed with what I say on, in the previous year or two on another podcast, because I let it fly. I let my anger fly and I let my words fly. And it's not the worst thing I could ever do, but it certainly is not the best. And so if you were to judge me on that, based on just that, then you are telling, you know, you're not open to the fact that I am actually making concerted efforts to go back to what the church teaches and to live it better and better in my life. So I can understand why Lady Gaga responded that way. And I just kind of picked up a hint, and maybe it's just my personal thing, of from Catholic Link, that they were actually being judgmental and assuming that Hollywood people's lives are all trash. There's a lot of people, and we're going to talk about the show every time on the show about people who are doing good things, and we need to celebrate those things. And you know, we can pray for them, but we don't have to bring it up and rub it in their face, kind of thing. So anyway, that's my 2 cents worth. I think I've expended all of my pennies for the day.
Yeah. Well. I think that we've taken as far as we can with Gaga. Although I was going to mention that we mentioned last week or one of the prior couple episodes that Bradley Cooper is openly Catholic. And I did see, although I've heard Gaga's engaged to somebody else. I don't know if it's ended or what. At one point she was engaged to somebody. She was seen having dinner with Bradley and hopping on the back of his motorcycle recently, so who knows? Maybe those two were...
What in the world are we doing in this show? Like, we mentioned the Will Ferrell movie, and it goes down kaput the next day. We talked about Bradley Cooper, and now they're getting together with Lady Gaga.
Well, it could be a friend thing, but I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting if Cooper and Gaga...
I would be interested turned if into we the could Catholic talk about the couple. Lotto numbers for tomorrow when something happens for us. But, you know, it's just interesting. Okay, so what's next on the plate,
Master Plan? Next is... So here's where we get kind of crazy, I guess, for this kind of show. We're going to talk about Caitlyn Jenner.
Salacious. Just as we promised.
Boy. Yeah, that's all we need is like having that become our tag word or something. Caitlyn Jenner is supposedly, although a spokesman denies it and calls us all hogwash today. I have a feeling, I work in the media 20 years, I think where there's smoke, there's fire, and... this is probably a true story, and people that could make a lot of money off Caitlyn being a transgender spokesperson are freaking out trying to hush this up. Excuse me, folks, for having a cold. But said that Caitlyn Jenner is experiencing, quote, sex change regret and might detransition. So I guess that's another word we have to learn, along with all the other strange words we're being forced to learn in relation to Caitlyn Jenner.
I can't deal with the vocabulary list, man. It's
I know, right?
Still, elementary school's like haunting me.
Yeah. But it said, it hasn't been easy for Caitlyn. It's been very hard, says Ian Halperin, who is a very well-regarded journalist generally. Just
and
you know.
Biographer.
And he's a he's a biographer. And anyways, well-regarded. He wrote a book about the Kardashians. I'm just saying the guy's been around. He's not fly-by-night, but anyway... they said that he says that she's considering detransitioning, and I'm only saying she because I don't know, the world's like brainwashed us all into saying that.
Because we'll spend half the show just explaining our pronouns. So
I know, right?
Let's
so
fly
anyway,
with it.
Of course, I regard Jenner as a man still, but anyway, the author of a new book about the Kardashian family told The Wrap on Wednesday, this website. So he said that while researching his book, multiple sources told him the former Olympian had been miserable for months and has considered transitioning back to a man. One source confirmed to me, Caitlyn has made whispers of sex change regret, hinting she might go back to being Bruce Jenner. Halperin said that one longtime friend told him that while Jenner was thrilled to champion transgender issues, the reality TV personality could detransition in the next couple of years. Boy, that's a lot of transitions. It hasn't been easy for Caitlyn. It's been very hard. She's thrilled she has raised awareness. Da-da-da-da-da. But anyway, they said it's much harder than she anticipated. And
She in quotes, guys. She is still attracted to women, that kind of thing. That's another thing.
They're saying that she's still into women, wants to meet the right one. Based on, still has the equipment of a man, just to let you folks know in as delicate a way as possible. Based on his research, Halperin believes that Jenner will detransition in the next couple of years, telling the public how difficult it was, but noting that she was happy to help raise awareness. They said that a lengthy Vanity Fair story recalls a panic attack that she experienced after undergoing facial feminization surgery, during which she wondered, what did I just do? What did I just do to myself? In his book, the number one New York Times bestselling author and award-winning journalist reveals that Jenner's ex-wife, Kris Jenner, was very aware of her husband's desire to transition and forced him into religious conversion therapy. Really? and attempted to get him to attend church in an effort to save their marriage. Well, I find that hard to believe, considering that she's the one who told Kim to market a surreptitious sex tape, and thus launching this atrocious family upon America's consciousness.
Let's just, given what we just talked about being judgmental, let's just
I know, you're right, you're right.
Yeah, okay. Kris Jenner might be confused about her priorities. I'm just going to say
sure.
that.
Sure, okay, let's say that. Okay, fine. Hope for the best. But, okay, so the thing is that we're not just trying to, like, wallow in the story of Caitlyn Jenner. We're trying to, what we think is interesting is that there was such a media deluge and consensus and, like, tsunami of coverage.
That's a good word for it.
Last year, like you must call Bruce Caitlin. You must say it's a woman. You must. And
yeah. And
I was one of the people that tried to hold out and make, you know, wisecracks on my Facebook page and keep calling, you know, Jenner Bruce and all that. And then, you know, it just was browbeaten so much that I finally started drinking the Kool-Aid and saying what they want you to say. And I find it interesting that, you know, this is obviously not natural and not God's kind of plan for us, really. And so seeing that Caitlyn still remains miserable and may want to go back is kind of an interesting thing that, well, then, you know, what was all this hype about? And, you know, should people like Jenner have been messing with what God gave them in the first place? And what's going on with this whole agenda? I mean, some people, a woman that hosts a Catholic podcast on my personal site, Radio Titans, a woman named Elizabeth Thomas, she's a nurse, and she's very devout. And she said, when I was making the wisecracks on Facebook last year, she said, no, there really are people that she's encountered as patients that really genuinely are born and truly believe they're meant to be another gender. And so she said, you got to be understanding, some people may truly have that issue. But I think that when the media was getting behind this, putting Caitlyn Jenner on the cover of Vanity Fair, all glammed up, given awards at the ESPN Awards for courage and all this, I think that the media agenda isn't really concerned with caring about these people. It's just trying to make things as weird and twisted as possible. And saying, okay,
they need a cause.
Yeah, they need a cause. And even if you're born that way and it truly is real for you, it's like, okay, well, everybody has some sort of condition. I have a recurring leg infection that puts me in the hospital. I'm not going to go say, hey, Vanity Fair, put me on the cover to talk about that.
Right.
Although I'm not going to turn them down.
Look, your legs are not as pretty as Caitlyn Jenner. Let's just say that.
My.
Okay.
Some would say, but
well, okay.
Others might not.
The others might not.
But yeah, so I'm just saying that when it becomes part of an agenda in which the whole, you know, it's one thing to have the mindset that you might actually be born that way, but what about the agenda of just anything goes sexuality is the issue of what media is really trying to sell us here.
Right.
And so I find it interesting that anything goes, and yet she's still miserable. And, you know, and you pointed out, you found the stats that transgenders as a whole are not happy.
Yeah, they're exactly. It's pretty much known since 1979, at least in this country. Other studies. Now, the current Obama administration officially spokeshole for the for the AKA pie hole for the transgenders don't have a higher risk of suicide just among teens who are bullied, which, you know, I think is a different thing. When you look at transgender folks who have actually gone through surgery, the percentage of attempted suicides is 41%. That's close to half. That's attempted suicides. That's not counting how many of them are, you know, going through clinical depression and other problems. The biggest killers of transgender folks who have actually gone through sex reassignment surgery are both suicides and cardiovascular disease, which we do also know cardiovascular disease is, you know, just to be frank, is exacerbated by clinical depression and that sort of thing. So a lot of, just to give you a name out there of this person who's been on this, he's been involved in hormone therapy since 1979. Oh, dang nabbit, I just lost it. His name is Charles. Hold on. Coming up there. It's going... Slide it, slide it, slide... There it is. Charles Inlenfield. So I will spell that because I know I didn't pronounce it right. It's I-H-L-E-N-F-E-L-D. And he's been involved. He's a doctor. He's been worked with Dr. Harry Benjamin. And he says there's just too much unhappiness among people who have had the surgery, meaning sex reassignment surgery. Too many of them end in suicide. And there's just sort of like this quote from the article that I got from the Federalist.com. It's also in the Wall Street Journal. So it's been posted several places. 36 years of insanity of ignoring poor outcomes and hoping they will go away is long enough. Honestly, the jury is only still out, I think, because the media, like you said, this is an agenda about, you know, LGBTQ whatever rights type of thing. And again, rights, in my opinion, are in quotes. The amount of unhappiness and suicide and all of that is just... it's way too high. And whereas transgender folks who actually have the disorder, you know, God forbid, that's in quotes too. I have a father who was, you know, worked in a women's prison for some years as a physician. He's a doctor, and he did meet several women who really psychologically tested as a man, the way they think, the way they, you know, where their focuses are, their everything. But they physically, genetically are phenotypically, as they say in science, a woman. And this is it's got to be a horrendously torturous disorder. But I cannot justify switching it, the body, to try to match the brain, because it does not seem to actually help. Because they still are conflicted about certain things. They're not fully a man anyway, and they know that too. So if I'm talking about women going to men type of thing, because that's my father's experience in the prison. But it behooves us to be compassionate towards people who have this disorder, but to sit there and celebrate it as something to be normalized and even glorified, is not helping anyone who is suffering from this. And even those who are celebrity and, you know, have gone through gender reassignment or about to go, I guess he's about to. So yeah, it's really kind of interesting how that's twisted our culture into, you can't say anything about anyone, because honestly, I can't condemn anyone who has this disorder. I can say you have no right to make me say it's normal. What you're suffering is real and horrible, and it should be taken with compassion and as much understanding as possibly can be understood. But let's not go and turn into this media tsunami, as you put it, to add to our vocabulary list, to glorify this. This is not helping anyone. So it's really kind of sad to me that's... It's a cause. It's a salacious cause, to use that word again today. All right, what's next on the docket? You got the master plan there.
Well, yeah, it's time for our roundup. Yes. Rolling, 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 though the streams are swollen. So this week, once again, I played way too long of a version of that. But this week, we always try to put in a couple of little things that aren't worth dwelling on terribly long, but are kind of interesting about pop culture. Anyways, Meghan Trainor, great pop singer of the last couple of years.
All about that bass, about that bass.
Yeah, which is a great song, great video. Like about body positivity in a good sense, about, you know, not worrying about being overweight if the world sneers at you for not being stick thin. And excuse me. And she also has had a great song called "Dear Future Husband," which was a really cute song. She has a very 50s, 60s girl group kind of a sound. And anyways, her new song from her second album is out, and it was called "Me Too." And apparently, they digitally altered her to look thinner, despite the fact her entire career is built around, "Hey, look at me! I'm happy being
curvaceous."
You know, yes,
salaciously curvaceous.
Well, not salacious. She's very wholesome. We're only promoting wholesome.
I was trying to like throw in a word again.
Okay, so she's taking down the video and quote until they fix it. It says in a series of Snapchat photos or posts, Trainor claimed that the editors for the video had digitally altered her appearance to make her appear thinner, that she would keep the video down until the alterations were removed. And it just said, my waist is not that teeny. I had a bomb waist that night. I don't know why they didn't like my waist, but I didn't approve that video, and it went out for the world, so I'm embarrassed. The video is still one of my favorite videos I've ever done. Very proud of it. I just am upset, not quite using the word upset, that they broke my ribs, you know? And so anyways, I just thought that here's somebody who's a very positive presence in the pop world, completely at odds with the likes of Nicki Minaj or, unfortunately, the way Beyonce has been going the last few years. And I think that she puts a good message out to accept yourself and, you know that you can be a good person regardless of whether people snicker for being a little big or whatever. And I think it's unfortunate that the record label did this to her and that noble that she's standing up to it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, from what I remember from that first song, All About That Bass, she was like being turned down for, you know, because she was trying to get in the music industry. And, well, you're too big, you're too heavy. And, you know, I think it was her mother, this is all based on memory, who inspired her to go ahead and make her own video. And she became a YouTube success and made chunks of change off of that, which is the way it should be. And, you know, that's called entrepreneurship. You know what I'm saying? Getting out there and going and doing it. And so she stood by her principles then. And she doesn't, ultimately, Meghan Trainor has basically started off saying, I don't need the music industry to float me on this. If you want to be a part of the cash cow that I just made, no pun on the cow part, that wasn't a good choice of words. That's so mean. I didn't mean to do that. Anyway, it's like my mother. She'd like totally been upset if I'd said that about her. But so I was like, you know, she already made her way without them and sort of flying, not sort of, actually flying in the face of all their so-called standards. And so it's good to see that she follows through and kept those standards and said, look, media machine, music industry, I can do this without you. So if you want to be a part of this venture, then you do it right. And that's pretty darn admirable. It's nice to see that she actually had the power to take it down because they could have told her to, you know, pee off, you know. So good for her. I'm very happy for her to do that.
And then the other thing, I love this one. Whoopi Goldberg, who I have really been a huge fan of almost her whole career. I mean, occasionally says some things that we can't agree with. She's very pro-choice or pro-abortion. But she does a lot of other cool things, though, I think. And she's very funny, and I think she cares about people. And she did, of course, the classic movie Sister Act. Well, now, as she's co-hosting The View, she surprised a group of Harlem nuns with a donation of a new van, a year's worth of gas, and $10,000 to go towards their order's charities. It said that the Order of the Franciscan Handmaids of the Most Pure Heart of Mary, that's definitely Catholic, caught Goldberg's attention as one of three traditionally black orders in the U.S. The Franciscan Handmaids serve in Harlem, New York City, and their apostolates include youth evangelization, education, palliative care, and a food pantry. And it said that basically that there was a nun named Sister Gertrude Ihenacho, a Nigerian native who serves with the order, even bears a passing resemblance to the habit in Goldberg of Sister Act. What do you do when people call you Whoopi? Asked the View host Raven Simone. I smile, I laugh, Sir Sister Gertrude said. And then Goldberg, dressed in her own version of a Franciscan handmaid habit, popped around the corner to surprise Sister Gertrude and her order with the money, donated by Retail Me Not, and the Sienna van donated by Toyota. And so I say that's awesome.
Yeah, and you know what's funny to me is I love those Sister Act films, and as a lot of other people, come on, but she was really frustrated doing the sequel. She kept rejecting Disney's offer to do the next one, and then they upped the money, and she rejected it, and they upped the money, and then she rejected it, and finally she accepted it. But she actually had a distaste in her mouth about doing those films, I think, for a long time. And so it's nice to see that she's changed her mind. She literally had said in interviews shortly after the films were put out and made so much money, because people ask about her success and wish she could do a third one and all this. And she admitted that she really didn't want to be a part of it. And it's, you know, she wasn't trying to be pro-Catholic necessarily. She didn't know how to sing and all this stuff. So it's nice to see that she actually kind of embraced it and you know, went for it and helped out some sisters after all.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. So she really doesn't do any singing in the movie?
She does do her own singing, but she doesn't like her voice. And they had to use coaches, of course, to help her. But she actually does sing really well, and she just doesn't believe it. You know, it's one of those things that everybody goes through where they, you know, she thinks she can't sing, but I don't know who she's trying to compare herself to.
She did
just fine in there, actually.
Back to a broader topic. There was a couple things still going on that I'm trying to... Oh, yeah. So superheroes are in the theater, it seems like, every other
all
movie.
All over the place. Sometimes in all of one movie, which I will see on Monday, actually.
Oh, are you? Okay. Yeah. So... yeah, the new one, Captain America Civil War, is basically Avengers 3, because all the Avengers but Thor and the Hulk are in it. But then they bring in other people to confuse you further, like Black Panther, and I don't know. There's just so many superheroes, it's kind of getting ridiculous. But one thing that I wrote for a site called LifeSet, owned by Catholic Laura Ingraham, is that I found it a little concerning that in Winter Soldier, the prior film, and in the Captain America series, and the new movie, Civil War, out in theaters now, the level of violence is really taken kind of seriously at points. I mean, there's a lot of scenes that are still played for laughs in Civil War because they try to have humor in these Marvel movies, but Captain America tends to be a little more serious than say, the Avengers or Iron Man, and... like in the second Captain America and the Winter Soldier, there was like a lot of really intense gunfights that I was like, man, you know, this in any other context other than a superhero outfit would be an R-rated movie. And the current movie, it isn't like any individual moment of torture or something like that, but it's just nonstop punching, kicking, shooting, car crashes, chases, etc. And it's like, you know, again... we have a tendency to think, oh, this is kid stuff because it's from a comic book and they're in costume. And so you just see tons of kids in the theater. And I got to wonder, like, you know, doesn't it have an effect on young kids' mindsets? I mean, you know, because it's easy to go, oh, it's not that bad because there's obviously no sex, nudity, foul language is at a bare minimum. You know, and yet... violence, man. It's like, I don't know how we excuse that so often with movies for kids.
Yeah, I can see your point. And the thing is, like, I wouldn't necessarily take kids to see that at, you know, I'd be really careful about the age range for me if I were a parent. But I'm not, so... and that's proof that God has mercy on this world. But anyway, so... With the violence thing, I understand that we're trying to, you know, fight evil with good and that sort of thing. But I think with the Civil War movie that's coming out, and I'm seeing it because my fiance really wants to see it, and the traction is all the action. Because I don't know diddly about those characters really, and he probably knows only slightly more because he's male and he grew up in California and maybe had some comic books, but he's not really a comic book junkie. So I think he's going to see it because A, everybody said it was amazing and the action was amazing, and I think that's what's selling. But there is sort of an underlying thing of where, how desensitized do we get where, you know, it's like going on roller coaster rides. How desensitized do we get to a point where we're designing and riding roller coasters that are going to rip our backs out for the rest of our lives if we survive them? So, I mean, you just, there's a, can you make the point of good versus evil without having this constant violent battle where you're not, it's more, it sounds like more like showmanship than it is about, you know, than it is about the story, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, generally, you know, that's what ratings are for. I was saying, like, you know, if it says PG-13, maybe don't take your 5-year-old to it. But I was amazed. The real trouble was Deadpool earlier this year, R-rated.
Oh, yeah.
To the extreme. Lots of foul language, dirty
jokes.
Lots
of sexual
sex
stuff.
Like,
yeah.
Wow. I mean, like they take you through an entire year's worth of holidays.
Let's just say that my fiance was excited when we left the theater and I had to calm him down with an ice bucket. I'm, like, almost completely serious.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yeah, that's how sexualized that film was. Honestly, it was really, like, you know, and everything. So,
yeah. But,
so,
you know, so, I mean, and yet I saw, like, parents bringing the little 4-year-olds. And even Whoopi on The View and the others were going, no, what are you doing? You know, and they're pretty liberal-minded.
Yeah. I mean, Whoopi's the one who says, well, he wasn't convicted of rape. I mean, so...
What?
Yeah,
who,
she
Deadpool?
Said that... she said that of the director... Who's the director? I'm blanking.
Woody Allen?
No, the director who...
Polanski.
Polanski.
Oh.
He's like, oh, he wasn't convicted of rape. And we're like, what?
Oh, no.
So that's how loose she is on... that whole crossing the line. So after we praise her, we will now put her down with her own quote. But
yeah.
So, but yeah, the it comes and I noticed that there's been a big trend the last 3 years for sure of you know, like the grim stories on television as well as Once Upon a Time and taking very dark angles to all these fairy tales. But in defense of that, the original fairy tales were very dark. Much of folklore and music, musical lyrics, etc., were very dark over centuries and centuries. It was Walt Disney, while he was alive, that turned them into cleaned up, positive, happy stories. So a lot of times, you know, if you just look at Irish folk music, you know, original stories, all the romance songs with like over 100 verses that would take you days and several barrels of beer to get through always end up in murder. It was always mixed together. I loved her so much. I reddened the river with her blood. I mean, it's just something that is true of a lot of old fairy tales and stories that it's just because we grew up with Walt Disney that we, you know, see them as these pure, innocent stories. But they actually weren't. So in some ways, we sweetened it up a little bit and didn't expose kids to the violence and reality of people killing each other out of passion. But I don't know. This is kind of with the whole constant, I just feel like it's just about a thrill ride more than anything else, rather than telling a story about good and evil. That, you know, it lost its purpose.
Well, I mean, no, I think actually this movie does have a message that's very
fantastic.
Interesting.
Fantastic. Because
yeah,
I've seen
no,
you
haven't seen it. Yeah, but no, but it's actually it is very interesting because the heart of it is that the Avengers get in trouble for wreaking havoc and having so-called collateral damage everywhere they go when they're saving the world. And that innocent people have died in each one of the two movies by hundreds or thousands when they're doing these final showdowns. And so they surprisingly use the real world, United Nations, as a point of debate and say, does the United Nations have a right to step in and control the Avengers rather than let them stay private? And will they agree? And that's what the civil war between them is about, is that Iron Man and some of the others are okay with having the UN tell them what to do. Mm-hmm. And then the Captain America is like, no, America first, Avengers first. We know what we're doing. Things happen. Sometimes you can't control all the bad in the world. And, that's that. And so it's actually a very interesting philosophical battle.
Wait a minute, this is a
discussed.
Political date. This is all a political debate then. That's that, you know, it's the same thing with the America is, okay, we go and we're policing the world, which is what we're accused of, and you have this collateral damage, and then the U.N. is like, no, you cannot do that. That sounds very, doesn't it sound like that?
Yeah, but yeah. I'm saying that, these movies, I think, tend to have a right-leaning perspective anyway, the Marvel ones. So, I mean, to me, it was fine, but so many movies do the other, but I don't know, I do at the same time, it's so action-packed and crazy that hopefully the message sticks with people to some degree, but if you don't, you know, if you're from the other perspective side of the political spectrum, you're not going to mind that much because there's always something blowing up around the corner.
See, it balances out with all the explosions. That's what he's saying, really.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think we're running out of time here. So
okay.
Actually, so next week, it's actually good timing. The last thing we're going to talk about today was the issue of Johnny Depp and his freakish character, the Mad take on the Mad Hatter in the Alice in Wonderland movies. So that movie comes out end of the month. So we'll probably just deal with it next week.
Okay.
Also a really interesting article about how some of our biggest action and sci-fi movies actually are centered around spiritual quests and discernment and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, but we'll hit those next week. But
yeah. Till
then, I'm Carl Kozlowski.
And I'm Tanya Yarbrough.
And thanks for listening to Pop Culture.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.